Today, I'm talking to Brooke. Brooke's story kept unfolding with surprising wonders. She's just finished training for a super cool top secret government job where she finds bad guys. Well, it was top secret until her super proud 7-year-old daughter told a cashier at Target the news, which led us to talk about the whens and whys of entrusting children with privileged information. Brooke is divorced, and her ex has a terrific new girlfriend who has terrific kids the same age as Brooke's kids. This set of circumstances led us to have a heart-to-heart with Brooke's touchy inner child and solve the riddle of why kids give a beloved parent the cold shoulder. Other topics we skated to: accepting the bittersweet without trying to change it, appreciating a partner with an inborn reflex for goofiness, and how singing to or with your child can be more valuable than an earnest conversation. I also got to picture 4 generations of female ice skaters ready to show their moves. In the wrap-up, I'll share a perspective for dealing with blended families that sociobiologists learned from elephant mothers. I'll explain how music embeds experience in memory, and you'll learn an untranslatable and swoon-worthy word in Arabic. First, a disclaimer. What you are about to listen to is not a professional counseling session. Each episode is a one-time conversation, and the advice I offer does not constitute psychological treatment or serve as a substitute for professional diagnosis, intervention, or behavioral health care. In order to protect their privacy, our guests have been given pseudonyms and some personal details have been changed. If you have concerns about your child's well-being or your own, seek out guidance from a medical or mental health professional. Good places to start: your child's pediatrician, the counseling staff at your child's school, and the American Psychological Association's comprehensive guide to finding resources in your state. And now, on to the fun. Honey, you're my best friend, and I think that we got this. One day we'll look back and laugh, but in the meantime, we got this, we got this, we got this.
In the meantime, we got this, we got this.
Hey, Brooke.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, too, in this unusual time we're all in.
It's been a year.
And I know it's really been a year for you. So I want to tell you what I know and then hear from you what you would like to talk about today.
Okay.
You have 2 children, a 7-year-old daughter, and we're going to call her the 7-year-old rather than her name. That's okay with you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you have a 4-year-old son with an adorable name, but we're going to call him the 4-year-old.
Okay.
And you have been divorced for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you went away for 9 months to train to be a federal law enforcement officer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Was it because of COVID that you needed to stay for 9 months straight, or did you know that in advance?
No, I had no idea in advance. Normally, the program is like 5 months. It was like 18 weeks at the time. Sometimes it changes, but mine was 18 weeks. And then after the first 2 weeks, we're allowed to go home on the weekends, or we can have family come see us. So that was always my plan. You know, I'd worked it out with my ex-husband that, you know, he'd bring the kids down to see me and I'd go to see them.
So that was the plan you expected. How far apart were you, city-wise, travel-wise?
It was like an 8-hour drive.
Okay. So a big drive. Your relationship with him before, I'm going to call it, you were deployed, before you went into training, was basically harmonious, gracious, good etiquette, polite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So it was good. So this whole plan, I imagine, was something you looked forward to very much, excited, a little bit nervous, something totally new for you, a different line of work.
I had been with this agency for 13 years. So I kind of knew the ins and outs a little bit, but it was a completely different job role. Absolutely.
Was it a step up, a step sideways, or a step into something more adventurous, more challenging?
It was a step up.
And you thought 18 weeks. And then what happened?
And then there was COVID. So I did get to come home once in February, and it was hard. Even though I had only been gone for, I think, like 4 weeks, that time we had tickets to see Disney on Ice. And so I thought it would be like really fun. And it just wasn't. Even just being gone for 4 weeks, the kids were like missing their dad and they didn't really have that great of a time at the Disney on Ice. They were kind of quiet. And it was just shocking to me because those just aren't my kids. And it got to the point we were like in the intermission and my daughter's like, I just want to go home and I want to see dad. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Him? So we that left. Guy? You do?
Yeah.
So
I was like, I've been gone for
remember
weeks.
Me? Remember my name?
Yeah.
Mommy?
Yeah. And it's like, I FaceTimed them. So it wasn't a good trip home at all. And then probably 6 weeks later is when they sent us home. And they closed down the facility and there's this global pandemic. So I drove home, but needed to quarantine for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And then after that, slowly would integrate with them. So I could see them the time that I was home, which was about 7 weeks. But again, it wasn't like it was before where we had like our shared custody. They really didn't want to stay the night with me and spend time with me. You know, and everybody's kind of bunkered down. So it was like really lonely because I didn't know what was going to happen with this job. And also my kids didn't want to be around me. And then to throw another wrench into the story, my ex-husband was dating someone new. And during COVID, she's got 2 children close to my kids' age and they moved in with him so they could all kind of be in a pod together. And I think that was like the biggest dynamic of them not wanting to come because they had like 2 friends that they could play with. And I didn't have anything but me. So that was a whole nother thing that was happening at the same time.
So do you remember when the children were very small before you got divorced, how if you and your husband would go away, when you came back, and I don't know if you ever experienced this, but it's very common, that they would be cold or dismissive to you or turn their back on you just for a little bit, like minutes or maybe an hour? Did that ever happen?
It did with my ex-husband when he would go away for some business trips. 2 weeks was a decent amount of time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I do remember that, yeah.
And was there a way you made sense of that then? Like why children would do that to someone they love, why they would turn a cold shoulder?
I was never able really to figure it out. And honestly, I never gave it even that much thought because in my mind, I thought, oh, they'll warm up. They'll be back buddies. And it was usually, from what I remember, such a short period of time that my daughter would have trouble like warming back up. With my son, I don't remember us going anywhere. They were both in daycare at really young ages because I had to go back to work. So at like 3 or 4 months, they were both back in daycare. So maybe they just handled that a little bit better when he left and then came back.
So attachment theory teaches us about transitional objects and being able to hold a loved one in mind and being able to conjure them when you're not with them. And did either of your kids ever have a teddy bear or a lovey or a doll that they wanted with them a lot of the time?
Oddly enough, that only happened after we got divorced. Mm-hmm. Before that, they didn't have anything like that.
There it is. So what the children are saying, and it's not at all conscious. You used such wonderful words before the warm-up. You said the way you understood that in relation to your ex-husband, but your husband then, was the warm-up and going to be back being buddies.
Yeah.
That's going to happen with you. And the person that you have the biggest conversations with now is the little girl in you that is saying, excuse me, I did this for the family. I did something very important. I did this for the welfare of the nation. I did something incredibly difficult and I was lonely too. And now you bunch of selfish ingrates are all having a big New Year's Day party and here I am. So tell me how you are trying to connect with the kids these days and what you say to yourself and what you say to them about, for example, the other two children, about your ex-husband's girlfriend. So we have an 8 and a 6-year-old, and we have a new person in their lives. Do they talk to you about them with enthusiasm? Do they, especially the 7-year-old, does she intuit not to talk to you about that? How does that interchange go?
In the beginning, she didn't. She was very conscious of mentioning the other woman and her kids.
Oh, I love the way you called her the other woman, because that's what she is in this picture. Yeah.
Yes, but she is such a lovely person, let me tell you. And I am so incredibly grateful for her. That's a side note, but...
It isn't a side note. Could you elaborate a teeny bit?
Oh, sure.
Does it have to do with the nature of your ex-husband and what a good combo they are?
They are a good combo, I would say that. But also that she has taken on doing like the virtual school and taking on the role that I would have maybe done had I not been in Virginia. Like she did all of this with her kids and with mine.
Wow.
And she would send me videos sometimes or pictures and she would text me. It was just so incredibly sweet because I think she knew like as another mom that this was hard.
Am I seeing heartbreak right now when I look at you as you talk about this? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It gets like so emotional for me because it's what I know I would do in that situation. And finding someone who's like me that would love somebody else's kids as much as their own. Because when I came back in September, they got engaged in the few weeks before I got home. And so they are engaged. And the kids love that. They love this family unit. And I think it's something that I can't give them that they're getting.
No, you can't give it to them in that form. So you can't give them a populated household with the kind of person who has the patience and skill and intuition to help them with their virtual school and make a video and send it to the ex-wife, their mom. So she has a generous and sensitive spirit. There are a lot of things you can give them, and we're going to get to that. But continue with the heartbreak.
Yeah, so it's kind of bittersweet. I feel like so blessed that I could never complain about my divorce and my situation because I truly am blessed that my ex-husband was able to meet somebody as lovely as she is. And her kids, on top of it, are wonderful. They listen better than my kids. I'm like, what's going on?
And so this is what we call good peer pressure.
Yeah,
hallelujah. Yeah. And one way you can think about this is that your kids are going to a very fine and wholesome, and we haven't talked about wholesome, but I'm going to assume it, a fine and wholesome boarding school, and you don't have to pay tuition. And there is a headmistress who has not only a good heart, but good structure, and she's organized, and the other students are highly selected, and you are so glad that they are in a boarding school that has this kind of population.
That's a great way to put it. I mean, it is just, like I said, bittersweet, because I wish that I could have been there, and even now, you know, when I got home, my ex-husband was like, hey, this has kind of been working, and for consistency purposes, he was like, you know, you get 2 days a week, I get 2 days a week. Would you mind if our daughter stayed at the house with the other two kids so that they could all get homeschooled together by his fiance? He's like, I know you really want to be around her, but I think consistency wise, this might work. And the mom in me wanted to say, like, I want to teach my baby. I want to do all these things. But the brain is saying, that's not what she needs. What she needs is consistency. And he's right. And with my new job, I don't know that I would be able to do that. And so maybe there would be this back and forth shuffle, like, oh, I've got an early morning search warrant, I can't go. So I agreed. And I think it was the best decision for her and for all of us, I think, the consistency, because she's not getting that in school. For this woman to even take this on, it's not easy. My daughter's not the easiest.
No, your daughter's not the easiest. However, she's a very good companion to her daughter in quarantine. And we don't want to idealize her too much, because then she becomes kind of a hero and a martyr and an angel. And she's a real person. This is very much to her benefit in many ways, because the big ones can take care of the little ones just in terms of a little bit of wrangling between them or fooling around and teasing each other in the way that children can do with other children differently than with adults. So to feel that they are doing you a big favor and you can't be selfish by wanting your children unbalances this in the favor of, okay, I went away and lost what I had built with my children, and now they have a perfect fantasy life. Because they do not. They have a real life. Tell me what they know about your new job and their level of interest in it.
Interestingly, their dad and I have the same job. He had the job before I did.
So cool.
So they already kind of know certain things. But with today's climate and how people view law enforcement, unfortunately, we had to sit them down and talk to them about, you really can't tell people where we work. Sometimes there's like t-shirts they'll send like for kids, and it'll have like a logo or insignia on there. And it's just not a safe thing. And that was really hard for her to understand.
How did you explain that to her?
Well, I let my ex do most of the talking because he's been in the job for 15 years and I'm just kind of like the newer person. But he went on to say that some people don't look at police officers or law enforcement officers as good guys. There's some bad people out there. And if they see us with our logo on, that could make them angry, not because they're angry at us, but they're maybe angry and maybe they were mistreated. And so it's better that we just wear those clothes in our own home and around our family. And when people ask what we do, you can say they are a police officer, they help people, but don't ever use where we actually work. And that was hard for her because he had told me that while I was gone, they had a trip pre-COVID to Target, and she was really excited and told the cashier where I was.
Yeah.
And she was just,
she
my
told
mom.
The cashier.
The cashier was like, oh, that's really nice.
But this story was so fascinating, she stopped to listen.
He said, she is so proud of you.
Yes. Do you know what words she used?
I mean, I know she specifically said where I was and what I was doing, but because her dad worked in like a section of human trafficking. And so she would say, like, my dad helps kids.
Yes.
My dad saves kids.
Yeah.
And so even though that's not specifically what I work, but it's easier for her to understand, like, hey, we're helping people.
Let's do a version of what you do that is similar to my dad saves kids.
That I find bad guys.
You find bad guys? Mom, you do? What do you do with them then? Do you beat them up? Do you shoot them? Do you put handcuffs on them?
Oh my God. Yeah. So no, we did talk about that with guns, you know, because they hear that shooting. And
do you carry a gun, Mom?
They see it.
Yeah.
They see the gun, they see the badge because I wear it on my hip. And now they've gotten used to it. But before, I could tell they're kind of staring at it. And so we went over like the gun safety. You don't ever touch this gun. And we don't ever want to use the gun unless we have to. We talk to bad people and we figure out what happened. But we never, ever, ever use that gun unless we absolutely have to use it.
Mom, are you scared of the bad people? Could they hurt you? Could they shoot you, Mom?
He has not asked me that, and I don't know what I would say, honestly.
Good.
Because I don't want to scare him.
That's right. And these are extremely important conversations. I wish that every child could have similar sorts of conversations with their parents. Because what we're talking about is the difference between exciting secrets, important secrets, and scary secrets, and also what we keep in the family, what we share with others. This all has to do with restraint and enthusiasm. She talked to the cashier at Target because she's thrilled. Her mom is a superhero in her mind. And yeah. I mean, this is the moment of the status and image of women in the world and the way women default to guilt, either about working or not working, the way they show up for their children or feel that they don't. We have incredibly high standards for ourselves. And what you just said to me, which is, you know, I haven't encountered that one yet. I don't know what I will say. You can always say to them. So when the four-year-old says to you, Mom, could someone shoot you? Or why can't I tell people? Or do you do something bad secret? Because they have very simple-minded in some ways, no matter how brilliant the children are, concepts. Right. You can always say, that is such a good question. I'm really glad you asked me, and I don't have an answer yet, but I'm going to think about this a little bit, and I'll get back to you. And then you absolutely make sure you get back to them. And then you become very askable, and this covers all sorts of territory that's coming up ahead, especially for the seven-year-old. Soon, there's going to be all sorts of stuff where you want to be askable. So to get back to the two families, think about all the women on television series who have jobs similar to yours and the way they're portrayed a lot in fictionalized media is as talented, brilliant, gun-toting, and crazy. Think of it. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Also they have bipolar disorder.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the other side of manic pixie dream girl in some movies. This is, I don't know how to characterize it, but it's the brilliant in something that used to be a guy job, woman who is so valiant, such a good sleuth, so courageous, but crazy. And I can tell that you're not. Now, certainly, you may be anxious and depressed right now. And you may, as you said, have a feeling of bittersweetness about the kids.
Yeah.
Talk to me about your days, like right now, this week, and how you communicate with them.
Well, this particular week, they decided to go, their dad has like a cabin 2 hours north. So it snowed, so there's ice, so they can ice skate, and they can play. Oh. They're having a great time.
How do you know they're having a great time?
Well, we FaceTime.
Who initiates it? How long does it last? Who wants to get off?
It's about 50-50. I either text their dad or he'll text me like, hey, are you available for a FaceTime? And then we just chat. And lately, my four-year-old, he wants to talk for like 2 hours.
Okay, what's he talking about for 2 hours?
He will set the iPad down and just, Mom, I'm going to put you on the bed. And then he gets his like little action figures or whatever, and he starts playing. And then he'll get sidetracked to like the dog will walk by and he's like, oh, there's Norman, Norman. And then he kind of walks away.
Who walks away? Your son or Norman?
My son.
The dog's name is Norman?
The dog's name is Norman, yeah.
So he follows Norman and leaves you on the bed?
Yeah.
By yourself?
Yeah.
And you're waiting.
He comes back.
Yeah.
But it's like this thing where he just gets sidetracked and I'm like, hello? Hello?
And tell me your inner dialogue right at that moment.
Like, did you just forget about me? Like, I'm that forgettable?
Oh, wow.
We were okay. In the middle of a conversation.
Okay, so yes, and I want you to catch yourself on these. I'm that forgettable. It has nothing to do with you at that moment. So what he's learning to do is to have a conversation with himself and play with himself and his action figures and Norman. And you are part of his inner world at that moment. You're not a real person with things to do left on the bed, on the screen, and glued to it out of guilt and devotion.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It is guilt and devotion.
Yeah, guilt and devotion and boredom, frustration, annoyance. Do you do any forecasting at that moment? Like, oh, this is what my life is going to be like, just sitting on the bed and the iPad screen?
No, thankfully, I have not done that. I've hung up on him.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he hadn't come back and I just hang up.
Yeah. And this is a good plan to have with him in advance, to say to him, sometimes I'll have something else I need to do, so you'll come back and I'll be gone from the call.
Okay.
Is he able to initiate conversations with you himself?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, he just figured out how to hang up.
Okay, good. Good.
Like, if you want to go, you just say goodbye, and there's a red X, and you press the red X. He's got that now.
Okay, and what about your daughter? How is she connecting with you?
She doesn't connect with me as much as I had hoped. You know, having a daughter, it would be. She's very, very close with her dad, and she worries about him a lot.
Oh, talk about that, please. What is she worried about?
I don't know, because he does have a recent health condition, but she doesn't know anything about that.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure, because this has been going on before that had happened, because this is just so recent within the last 2 months. But she would get worried in the very beginning, because when we got divorced, I bought a home 2 streets over from our marital home. Mm-hmm. And so we could be really close. And when she would come stay the night with me and vice versa, she would worry about the other parent. But I think it was more prevalent when I got back that she really worries, like, where he's going. If she knows he's going up to the cabin to, like, work on fixing it up or whatever, she gets really, really sad, to the point of which I call him. Like, we FaceTime, and I'm like, can you talk to her? Because she's, like, really upset. Primarily happens at bedtime.
What does she say?
I really miss my dad. I wish my dad was here. And I've asked her, like, are you afraid something's going to happen to your dad? And she says, no. She just says, I really miss him. So she sleeps with one of his t-shirts.
Yes, that's so good.
Yeah.
And nothing weird about it. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Because they're little animals. So they look like humans. And we have all sorts of different expectations of them. But they're just little animals that want to be in the burrow or in the den. And so she misses her dad. Neither of you have to talk her out of that.
Right. Yeah.
You can be compassionate, interested, and alert, but not alarmed about it, because it's a very healthy sign of her attachment and connection to him.
Okay.
And you can talk to her. So when she says she misses him, does she say, lie down with me until I fall asleep, Mom?
No. I mean, she doesn't ask me any of those things. I just kind of do them. Where it'll be like bedtime. And so we'll just lay in her bed and I'll kind of rub her hair. And I'm like, I'm sorry you miss your dad.
So I just want to change that a little tiny bit to, I know you miss your dad.
Okay.
Because again, it's the bittersweetness that you feel. For a 7-year-old girl to have a deep and strong attachment to her father, even though it's couched in worry, is something very positive. Okay. Because she's an older daughter. They are more worried She was also an only child for 3 years. They're kind of worried, perfectionistic. They tend to be high achieving and they tend to get in everybody's business and they spin their wheels in their heads a little bit. So yeah. What you're going to do with her at bedtime, and you already do this by rubbing her hair, is just what you did when she was 2 or 3 and she got upset. You distracted her. To name the emotion, which is, I know you miss your dad. And then to sing with her, to read to her, to let her read to you, to rub her head, to rub her feet, if you can bear it, if they're clean enough, to hold her hand, to make up a story together so that the two of you are traveling to another pleasant spot. Do you recall doing this with her at all when she was very small? How you would distract her when she was about to get into trouble or have a tantrum?
Yeah.
Based on her temperament, do you remember what technique you used?
We would sing.
You would sing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Who has a good voice or bad voice? Either of you.
She's got a good voice. I have okay. a bad voice.
Does she mind?
Oh, no. I mean, she's so little that I guess maybe she couldn't hear how out of tune I am, but she had RSV as a baby. And so we were back doing like breathing treatments in the hospital.
Okay. Tell everyone what RSV is.
It's a respiratory infection that's highly contagious. And she had to be in isolation in the pediatric ward. So we couldn't take her to where all the other kids were, where they had games and toys and stuff. So
how old was she then?
About 9 or 10 months. Mm-hmm. And then the breathing treatments had to continue for a couple of years. And she eventually outgrew it, like the doctor said. After doing a couple of years of breathing treatments, she'll be able to outgrow this. And she has. But until she was about 4, we would have to do these breathing treatments in the wintertime because that's when it comes back, almost kind of like the flu. It's very strange. They have these like fall, winter time frames where you just start doing the breathing treatments again. So
what's the treatment?
It's just like what you would give a person with asthma. Mm-hmm. It's like albuterol just in here. And then they have like a mask. And she didn't like that.
No.
So she was obsessed with watching videos on my phone of herself. So that was a good distraction.
Okay, we're just going to call that happily occupied during an uncomfortable and slightly scary and weird experience. She found a way to both calm herself down and become absorbed in something else. And the reason I'm picking on the word obsessed is because she may need this now. And it's very adorable that she was looking at videos of herself. And certainly the whole world is now doing that, looking at videos of themselves. What are her go-to activities where you watch her getting out of her worried head and into a more relaxed frame of mind?
She will play with Barbies.
Great. Okay. So is there any tiny little part of you that has prejudice against Barbies?
No, because I used to play with Barbies.
Yes, of course you did.
Forever.
But do you play with Barbies together, the two of you at all?
No, you know, I was kind of like waiting to see if she's going to ask me and she hasn't. So okay, maybe she's in her own, doing her own thing. I just kind of let her have her own imagination.
Do the Barbies go back and forth with her in a little case or...
Nope, she's got some here,
yeah,
and she has some at her dad's. Mm-hmm.
So one thing I would do now, because we're wanting to make your home alluring, but not Disney World.
Right.
It doesn't have to be glittering and full of surprises, is maybe hide a Barbie or two somewhere, not let her know, and she will come across it because surprising delight in your environment can make it in her mind a place of serendipity and not simply, oh, here we are back at mom's house without our best friends in the world that are soon going to be our siblings and our dad, who I worry about a little bit, so I like to keep an eye on him. And I don't know if there are federal agent Barbies or not, but it is... oh, this is some kind of new and fun Barbie. Your goal with your son is for him to learn as he plays with his action figures to have a little bit of dialogue with himself so that he doesn't leave you sitting on the bed. Because it's not really you at that moment. It's just that companionship. And for him to have companionship with himself benefits everyone. For her, you're working a little bit towards some new level of companionship with you. And 7-year-olds are tricky, especially firstborn girls, because they're very sophisticated, and yet they're still emotional, dopey little kids. But you forget that. How does she present herself? I mean, I know she talks to cashiers at Target. Is she a friendly, outgoing person? Is she shy?
Around us, she's very friendly, very outgoing. In school, the teacher described her as being a little more shy. She doesn't raise her hand, even though she knows the answer. So it was interesting to hear that from the teacher, because here, she's very outgoing.
Do you think she hesitates in school because she doesn't want to get the answer wrong?
Yes. I asked her that.
And she told you?
She told me no.
Aha. Uh-huh. So you had the sense that that was the reason. And she denied it.
Yes.
So I want to talk just for a moment about shame. And this is, again, a wild stereotype, but we could sort of get men to have a little more shame and women a little less. It's really guilt that we want them to have, both sets, because guilt you can do something about, and shame feels like who you are.
Right.
She wants to get it right. And so just like hiding the surprise Barbie friends, because we're populating your house, and we can populate your house with imaginary creatures, just like before bed, the two of you are going to sing, and maybe... Does she enjoy reading a book together?
I asked her that recently. I said, let's read a book together, a chapter book.
And I just want you to hear your tone right then, because it really changed, and it was different than at any other time in this whole conversation. Do you know how it changed? Do you know how you sounded just then?
No.
It was, let's read a book together. It was a little, I'm exaggerating, but a little tiny bit pleading, hopeful, and defeated.
Yes.
So low-level book. I am not talking about King Lear here.
Okay.
I am talking about, are there Barbie books?
Yeah. Yep. She does have a few.
Along with the surprise Barbie, there is going to be the matching book, and it's just going to be by the bed, and you're not going to say anything.
Okay.
She's going to notice it. And you can feign just a little bit of silly surprise. She'll know.
Yeah.
Then you start to read the book together and jump off the page into any kind of conversation. So it's almost the opposite of what your son does, which is he forgets you're there and you're just part of his imaginary world. With her, we are opening a door so that you can get in, and then you can talk about the story that's not just the words on the page, and you are going to be captivated by her original and profound ideas.
That would be great. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. And it's rehearsal for in the classroom, and you absolutely are not going to say this to her, but it's rehearsal for her having the confidence that her ideas are worthy. And that it's not a danger to take the risk of sharing them in class. Does this ever happen? Does she tell you stories from her life at all, or does she keep them close to the vest?
I mean, usually I'll ask, like, hey, how did it go with Dad? It's like, what did you guys do? And then she goes on with, you know, what happened and things like that. Or when they were in school, she would tell me something that would not happen every day. Like, usually it was, hey, Johnny got in trouble today because he wasn't listening or something like that. But when I would ask, how's your day? Good?
Yeah, of course. So think about it. You were training at the academy or whatever it's called. And if you came home well, you weren't coming home, but if you were finishing up your day and someone said to you, how was your day? Tell me everything that happened. Start at the top.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's too general. And this is the tricky part. Her days are hard. It's hard to be seven. It's hard to do the online work. Tell me what you're feeling right this minute. Something, I can't quite read it.
I mean, I never really thought of it that way. I mean, I realize it's difficult. But when you had said, tell me if I'm back in my training and someone said, you know, tell me about your day. Like, that just sat with me for a minute, like how daunting that was and how I need to be specific. If I'm going to be specific with anybody, it should be her.
That's so perfectly put. And daunting is also the right word. To be specific, because otherwise it's for you, it's not for her.
Right.
It's for reassurance for you. It's mm-hmm. a bid for connection. She really wants to ghost you right that second because she did her day and it's hard to be seven. It's hard to be in virtual school. It's hard to be in real school. It's hard to do the code switching you have to do as you talk to your teacher, the popular girls, your actual crowd, and then come home and have to share all of that. So your perspective towards her, I imagine in your training, there were people who came from backgrounds and life experiences different than yours. Is that accurate?
For sure. Absolutely.
How did you figure out how to communicate with them and make alliances with them?
I truly wanted to know about them and what their experiences were because they were so different than mine that I would just ask questions.
What sorts of questions? You certainly didn't say, how was your life?
Right. So there was a girl in our section. She was a talent agent. And I was like, what? How did you get to here? And like, you know, and so then we just started talking. But really, it was very talented people in this institution and all different backgrounds. And so it's easy when, you know, you're sitting having lunch together and then someone mentions something, a place they had gone, something they had done. And then you think, oh, wow, how did you get involved with that? There's a genuine interest, I guess that would be what I would say.
And your face right now is the picture of being open-minded, captivated, fascinated, and at ease. So it doesn't sound like you felt self-conscious. You said to them, oh, how did you get from A to B and tell me more?
Right.
This is a wonderful phrase to use with preteen girls where you sit pretty still and you say, oh, I never thought of it that way. And you've said that to me a couple of times in this conversation, so I know you have that capacity. Tell me more. And it's a very open-minded, non-judging, not opinionated, and not digging for intel, which brings us to another habit you may be developing, which is part of your job, your new job, your new career is to figure things out really fast and astutely and look for things that are hidden and put the whole picture together. If you do this with a preteen and a teenager, and you are going to have two teenagers before terribly long, I mean, it's a little while with the little one, you will mostly worry all the time.
Awesome.
Because it's the hobby of our culture to kind of be afraid of and afraid for children and teenagers especially. They are spirit guides if you can relax around them. And with your daughter, it's Barbie world. Do you know what she loves about them?
I don't know, honestly.
Oh, good. Take a guess right now, and then you're going to find out. What did you love? You loved Barbies.
I love the fashion, like putting different clothes on them. But I've noticed she doesn't do that.
Oh, good. So different
I'm
reason.
Watching. Yeah, I'm thinking, okay, what's she doing here?
Does she make stories?
Yeah.
What kind of stories?
It's just like everyday talk that I would think she'd be having with a friend of hers.
Oh.
You know, like, oh, what are we doing today? Oh, we're going to go see my sister and we're going to, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of what I noticed, but I had this like OCD tendency maybe as a child where like I had all my Barbies like perfectly dressed and in a certain place and there's a Barbie house and it's organized. Hers is not like that at all. There's Barbies just all over the place. Half of them have clothes on. The Barbie house looks like a bomb went off and she just walks away, goes to the next thing. And I'm looking at it, you know, going, okay, don't clean up that mess. Leave it the way it is.
Oh, so good. It's so hard.
It's so hard.
Appreciate how hard that is. It's so hard. Almost torture.
It is.
Because you have a view of how to treat Barbies with dignity and respect. And OCD, I mean, we all have some degree of it. And we live in a world that pathologizes everything. And certainly some people are crippled with OCD.
Right.
But it is a way to organize a world that feels a little chaotic. Her purpose with her Barbies is different. And one of your assignments is to observe and understand what these Barbies do and what they represent. It sounds to me like it's more social among the Barbies and the Barbies and your daughter, and just kind of metabolizing the rhythm of the day or routines. She has two households. She has medical treatments ongoing. So she has a couple of different worlds that have very different sets of rules, expectations, and all three are very important, plus school. She has a lot of universes. And with the Barbies, she's doing something that helps her figure out how to manage the dance steps of her different worlds.
It almost felt like invasive in a way. I guess I didn't want to come across as like snooping or listening or whatever. Like, this is her time with her Barbie. So now that you say that, that's interesting to me. Something I didn't think about that I will.
The reason you'll do it, it's just like when your son asks you questions that you don't quite have the answer to yet, that you're not going to snoop or intrude or change the rhythm of what she does, but gently and curiously and calmly observe. Because your goal is to just get to know her a little bit better and her inner world. And it's what you did in your training with the talent agent who, what are you doing here? This is so interesting. And it's a wide-eyed, innocent curiosity rather than gathering facts and making a kind of deposition out of it.
Sure.
Does that make sense as a different perspective?
Yeah. And that's really what I've been looking for is to try to understand her or what she likes or doesn't like, because I would guess, or like how you kind of picked up on my inflection had changed, being kind of like needing. It almost feels that desperate coming back from being gone for a while. And I know it wasn't that long, but I feel like she's changed and I'm kind of left to figure this out. And I at times don't even know where to start. And she's only seven, so I'm thinking, what am I doing as a federal agent? I'm getting overwhelmed by a seven-year-old.
Oh, a seven-year-old is far more overwhelming, intimidating, and complicated than any terrorist perpetrator, criminal ever, really, much more, even if they have a whole infrastructure supporting them of an evil empire. A seven-year-old is a really complex creature. She's got a pretty complicated world. And it sounds like overall, she's managing it with grace and pretty good spirits. You haven't told me about any major psychological or emotional symptoms she has. So the one to take care of is the little girl in you who starts to say, who am I in this cast of characters? How do I take care of myself? How do I populate my world? And to treat her in some ways like an exchange student who is only going to be in this country for a short while, and you're interested in the culture and the habits and the manners of this odd visitor, and that you don't need to fix and straighten out your relationship with her all at once and fully and deeply right now.
Okay.
When will you see her next?
Tomorrow. They're coming back.
Perfect.
Tomorrow, like around 4. So, yeah. And we did talk earlier today, and she seems happy. She's like, I can't wait to come home. I'm like, who are you?
Okay. So this is so, I'm so glad you told me that they're coming back tomorrow at 4. 4 o'clock is a bad time of day for humans.
Oh, no.
No, I want you to know this so that when they come back at 4, if they're a little bit crankier, crabbier, or colder, then okay. You might have hope. This person who said, I can't wait to see you, if she seems touchy or aloof, one thing you can consider is that it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That is a low point in the daily circadian rhythm of humans. It's when people should be taking a brief nap. So what will happen when they come through the door? What do you picture?
Well, they will see my boyfriend.
Okay. We don't know him yet. Do they know him?
Yes. We've been dating for over a year.
What does he bring to the mix in terms of spirit, interest, temperament?
You know, he was a former therapist, and he's just really good with kids. And he's got 2 of his own. And so he's like the fun
yes!
guy.
Yes. Okay. Good with kids is a little bit of an inborn thing.
Okay.
That he came wired with this.
Right.
And sure. He's a playful person, would you say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And can he speak to a 4-year-old in 4-year-old and a 7-year-old in 7-year-old?
They adore him. They see his car parked out front. They come running in. Is he here? And looking for him. And I'm like, hi, I'm here.
Oh, this is so perfect because this is really full circle. And I really want to talk to your little girl right now.
Oh.
You chose a boyfriend that is the kind of person who likes children, maybe loves your children, and they're excited to see him. Their excitement is your excitement. And the person you have to take such tender care of is your little girl. Because exactly, and you raised your arms up when you said that, like, me, hello.
Yeah.
So you love your actual dad and you even worry about him. Do you ever worry about me, bitch? No, you don't.
That's what I'm thinking, like, hi.
And I just want to translate that hi to hallelujah.
I like that.
Because what you want for your children is a world of inspirational adults.
Yes.
And they have that. So many, actually many more than most, in this wonderful blended family where there's civility, mutual respect, and a nice big pod of people. So the minute they say, where is he? And they only have eyes for him. It's just like with your daughter, when she says, I miss daddy. And instead of saying, I'm sorry, you can say, I know. You can say to yourself, when they say, where's he? And they practically walk on top of you to get to him.
Uh-huh.
You can say to yourself, I know. that they are so excited about seeing him. And this is a full, rich world that I have made for them. Because you chose this man. You could have chosen a very different sort of man.
Sure.
Do you see the shift where it's a great benefit? It's almost like someone who can speak in accents. He can speak kid.
Yeah. And I don't know how he does it. They really like to play games with him. Like, he's just got that kind of personality, I think. It's just fun, goofy.
And that goofy, fun personality is of great benefit to the very serious, important, life and death, legal, ethical, moral, and spiritual work you're doing in your job and as a mother. And the oxygen of goofiness is so important for your atmosphere. That's why you picked him.
Yeah, I mean, it really is extremely important. And it was one of the things I saw that I didn't have in my marriage, because I'm kind of like a goofy person. And to have somebody on that kind of level, like, okay, we're both adults. We go to work, we pay our bills, we do our jobs. But at the end of the day, neither one of us takes ourselves like that serious. And so it kind of have that together, almost like hanging out with your best friend.
Oh.
And playing pranks on them, and no one's getting mad when you dump a bucket of cold water on them in the shower. Like, you know.
Does he do that?
No, but I've always threatened to do it to him, and a glitter bomb.
Glitter bomb. So right now on this planet, in this civilization, in this pandemic, silliness and the joy it brings. And again, we're animals. And this human animal needs silliness and fun and play so badly.
I agree. So I did get them a Christmas surprise. So I had my brother-in-law install an ice rink in my backyard.
Oh, wow. The casualness with which you said that. They have no idea?
No, they saw it.
Oh, they saw it.
But it wasn't frozen, so they couldn't skate on it yet. And my daughter knows how to skate a little bit. My son does not. But they're both really excited to get on the ice. And then he put in like an LED rope in the bottom of it. So when it freezes, there's a little remote, which my daughter's obsessed with already. And you can change the color of the lights under the ice. So she wants to do it when it gets a little bit dark, and then she can see the color. So they're really excited about that.
To give your daughter control, there are certain things in her life where she doesn't have as much control as she wishes. For example, her respiratory system, where she's living when, how much time she gets to spend with her mom. And your wonderful restraint in not straightening up the Barbies gives her control over Barbie world.
Yeah.
But this LED, her being the person who changes the colors, I imagine gives her both a combination of satisfaction and a kind of sparkling moment of delight.
Yes.
And in this skating New Year's, this special year, and your son is old enough to remember this now, you are making a memory for this family that they will not forget.
Oh, thank you.
And if you can bring into it all five senses, so skating has a lot of senses immediately, but to add to it at some point in the evening on this very special New Year's, to add music, to add singing, and I imagine you will have a meal that is something everybody enjoys, and to watch yourself for looking for clues about the future or remembering anything in the past and focus as much as you can. And it won't be hard because there's so much. There's the ice, there's the skating, there's the goofy boyfriend, there are the LED lights, and there's everybody together bringing in the new year.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I didn't even really think of it that way at all. I think I just get so caught up in okay, I have to get this done and do this and do that. And then, okay, and then we'll skate and then, you know, and then we'll eat, instead of really thinking about what you just said. It's like, there's the lights and there's the skating and there's the music, and just kind of taking a step back, because I think I've been so wrapped up in trying to connect with them, trying to make things special, because I know I don't have like the fun house, because I don't have a lot of the things that they like, or the other kids aren't here. So I get too focused, I think, on some of that other stuff rather than just enjoying the moments that I have.
What you're creating is an emotional deficit economy in your head, which is figuring out what you don't have. One thing that you do have is a boyfriend who equals about four kids put together. And a skating rink and the LED lights. Their job is to complain, to compare, to whine, and to do some pouting. If they didn't do that, they wouldn't be normal kids and I would be worried about them.
Yeah.
If they behaved like little adults. They are wonderfully kid-like, both of them. Yeah. And this is a fun opportunity for your inner kid. I imagine you never had a New Year's Eve quite like this, with a skating ring, LED lights, this delightful guy, and whatever you will have for dinner. Your childhood was different and good in its way, but to watch yourself for comparing, anticipating, and measuring, and to be in it. Do you skate? Do you know how to skate? Do you like to skate? Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. And the little one is going to learn to skate.
Yes. My 89-year-old grandmother, who loved to ice skate and kind of taught us how to ice skate, she wants to come over and get on skates. She just had a hip replacement. I told her it's not a good idea. She can kind of hang out and watch on the sides. She's got a little bit of Alzheimer's, so I think my mom's going to bring her on Saturday. Uh-huh. She lives with my mom. And just let her watch the kids skate. Of course, my mom is putting on ice skates and was like, I'll show these kids how this is done.
How so, this like, is
it's not
done.
That big. Like, Mom, it's not that large. It's not like, you know, we got to kind of be careful. They're just all so excited. And with COVID and just, especially my grandmother not being able to do anything. And the fact that we're going to be outside is really nice. And my kids are very aware of the virus. They talk about it and they understand that we can't really see family all that often. So it's kind of a big deal that my grandmother, so their great-grandmother, would be coming over and watching them skate, things like that for the new year.
So we have three generations. We have skaters. We have chosen family that is colorful and fun. And it's so interesting to me to hear you say, well, our house is not the fun house compared to the dad's house. And then in the same sentence, literally say, we're all so excited. And I can tell that you're excited too. This is your 89-year-old grandmother, your sort of full of herself, possibly mother, who says, I'll show them how to skate. And you say, it's not that big a rink, Mom. So that's the teenager in you still with her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so much so.
And then for everybody, the children on skates with the magical LED lights.
I told my brother-in-law, I'm like, I owe you big for that one, buddy.
So what a gift of a new year of a lively group of participants. And I wish you a wonderful time tomorrow night.
Oh,
and your
challenge
and my assignment to you is to stay in it and watch out for the comparisons or the forecasts or the history, because this is such a fertile environment for relaxing into the fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I really needed to hear that. I really did. I'm kind of hopeful of 2021, but at the same time, still feeling a little anxious, like a lot going on.
For you to be anxious about 2021, if you weren't, you would be the only thinking, feeling person on the planet who wasn't. And there's so much substance here. And it's so many interesting characters. And it's a play. So tomorrow night is another act and another scene in the play.
I like the way you put that.
Thank you. Okay, take care. And it was a pleasure talking to you.
It was so nice to talk to you. Thank you so much. I hope you have a really nice time with your family.
Thank
you. Enjoy 2021.
Thank you so much. As we always do in wrapping up our nurture versus nurture episodes, let's talk words. Mothers are so quick to do the guilt dance, the inadequate in one area or another calculus. So Brooke might say, sure, I have a superhero job where I protect people. Sure, there's a patient, sweet, and talented woman who enjoys caring for my kids along with her own, but do I measure up? Am I good enough? Let's look at her arrangement with her extended family as natural animal behavior. Sociobiologists use the term allomother, A-L-L-O-M-O-T-H-E-R, to describe the care provided to young elephants born in the wild by other related and unrelated friendly female members of the herd. Allomothers help spread responsibility and enhance the pleasures of tribal affiliation. And the reason I suggested musical accompaniment to the night skating adventure is that in addition to lifting our mood and lowering stress levels in our bodies, music helps embed experiences for life. It fires up the amygdala for emotions, along with the hippocampus for memory. When elderly humans lose their ability to communicate through speech, when they can no longer have a conversation, if given the opportunity to hear the music they loved in their youth, the brain lights up again. Some nursing homes provide iPods loaded with what families have told the staff is the residents' favorite old tunes. This intervention works as both an antidepressant, an energizer, and connector. A spouse with Alzheimer's may smile, tap a foot, sometimes they sing along. My parents are 92 and 98, and they're blind. Therefore, their activities are very limited. In the lobby of their assisted living home, my mom says, Alexa, play 40s dance music, play Frank Sinatra, and my mom and dad get up and dance. And when they want to get weepy, she says, play Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. And then she says, play Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah again. Here's what our modern day Dorothy Parker, the writer Fran Lebowitz, says about this topic in her Netflix documentary, Pretend It's a City. She says, I really think that musicians, probably musicians and cooks, are responsible for the most pleasure in human life. Motown music, which was very popular when I was a teenager, whenever I hear it, I instantly become happier. This is true of almost nothing else. That's a very important thing for human beings. Music makes people happier, and it doesn't harm them. Most things that make you feel better are harmful. It's very unusual. It's like a drug that doesn't kill you. I'll leave you today with the Arabic word tarab. It means mirth, glee, and specifically musically induced ecstasy or enchantment. T-A-A-R-A-B. Take a cue from Brooke and her family's plan for the new year. Find something to celebrate using all five senses in our three-dimensional world. Add a soundtrack. You'll be making memories. See you next week.